And welcome to everybody on YouTube. This is Off the Hook Overtime, where we can take your phone calls and continue our lively discussion online, not on the air. Unless, of course, somebody's rebroadcasting us over the air, in which case we'll try to watch our language. Everybody make it. Kyle, I see you over there.
Yeah.
Gila, are you there?
I'm here.
And Rob, I see you.
I also am there.
And, Frank, no, wait, who's Frank? No, Alex, yeah, that's who you are.
Barely here.
Okay,
barely.
Good. All right.
And we are on YouTube and we are sounding good.
Okay, well, that's the listener's judgment call there. So anyone have any points they want to expand upon from what we were talking about before with Twitter and freedom of speech and disobeying laws and various fun things like that?
Well, one important thing, we were talking earlier in Off the Hook about the protests coming up over the next weekend and so on regarding the reproductive rights situation we find ourselves in. And I do want to raise the point for anyone considering going to protests that one of the very basic protections you can get is to leave your phone at home. If you must bring your phone, turn off location tracking. Also, do not have Face ID or fingerprint ID enabled on your phone, because if you are arrested, and Alex, tell me if I'm wrong here, but I believe the prevailing rule is if you are arrested, the police cannot force you to input a passcode. They can, however, force you to unlock a phone with your finger or your face.
Yeah, I believe that's the case, and it, you know, it goes back to the Fifth Amendment, and forcing you to provide a password could be considered a form of self-incrimination.
Yeah, it does seem that way. I don't know, this whole Twitter thing kind of bugs me, because it's not that I shy away from arguments. That's not it at all. It's that I don't like bullies, and this is what we're heading towards, is where the bullies come back, can say whatever they want, can incite all kinds of horrible things, and we just have to treat it like, oh, yep, freedom of speech, and you got to let them say what they're going to say, regardless of the fact that they have so much more pull than anyone else will ever have. And it just seems like a really, really bad idea. I mean, we would not have had the last 4 years of hell were it not for social media. There's no question about that. And I just worry about what we are facing in the future. Alex, yeah, go ahead.
You know, to go back to the point that I had made during the ordinary hour of Off the Hook, which is that the reason why Twitter can discriminate on the basis of viewpoint about what it publishes and what it doesn't publish is because it itself has First Amendment rights. So this whole notion of Elon Musk returning the concept of freedom of speech to Twitter is at the same time destructive of Twitter's freedom of speech, mm-hmm. because it would at that point eviscerate its own ability to distinguish between speech that it likes and speech that it doesn't like, and treat everything, you know, as just one big dumpster fire. And really, that's where we were with Twitter prior to 2016. I mean, remember this, mm-hmm. many years ago, there were no rules about this. And if you don't have some form of rules or some form of community standards, this is going to deteriorate very quickly into something that looks like one of those fringe, you know, image boards that are out there, the 4chan, 8chan, 16chan, 32chan, whatever the hell they're up to at this point. Yeah, is that really what we want from Twitter? I mean, it almost seems as if Elon Musk, in his return to this no-holds-barred version of public discourse and public dialogue, is trying to destroy the very thing that he's intent on buying.
Well, he's being a disruptor, and being a disruptor is cool. But basically, you know, when you talk about the rules, who makes those rules? The people running the platform make the rules. And if you're told that you're not allowed to be there, and you're not allowed to be anywhere, then you have censorship. Then you have a situation that's very unhealthy that needs to be fought. When you have one company saying, yeah, we don't want to do business with you, we don't want you on our platform, as far as I'm concerned, they can do that. Even if it's not completely fair. If they use flawed logic to do that in the first place, they deserve to be shamed for that, but they still have the right to do it. And I think what we're moving into now is just this hugely naive area where everybody is just treated as if they have, you know, equal say in everything. And then you have the situation, Alex, that you were describing of just complete mayhem. Kyle and then Rob.
I just want to jump in and point out the use of the word morally.
Mm-hmm.
His concept there, it's not technically, it's not legally it was wrong for Twitter to make a decision about the former president being on their platform or removing him from it. It was morally wrong in his view. I'd love for him to just elaborate to the end of days about how important that is, because I would pose in response, what morally was he doing right to deserve to be there?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you want to take it to moral terms. It's, again, a totally different comparison. There was a whole lot of moral wrong going on from that account in many, a myriad people's point of view. And just look what happened in the way he was using that platform. And this person wants to talk to society about morality? Are you joking?
Oh, maybe he is. Go ahead, Rob.
And just the whole concept of a privately held or, you know, a privately held concern, a company, a person, an individual, whatever, that puts a website onto the net has to let people put things on that website that they don't want there. I mean, imagine if you had a house and anybody could put whatever signs they wanted on your lawn. You know, I'm an artist. I've never had to deal with somebody who hates me telling me what I should put in my painting. And Emmanuel, imagine if you had by law to publish every single article in 2600 that somebody thought should be in there. I mean, that would be craziness. That would be madness. And it would also destroy the usefulness of the publishing venue. Like, we can decide what we make.
You know how much paper that would take? That would be insane. It'd be bad for all of us. But yeah, you know, when I signed on, you know, just out of fun, what was the Trump media outlet before Truth Social? There was another one that ended in fire and disaster. Does anybody remember? Aren't we supposed to remember these things? I thought the internet was forever, but apparently it's not. Well, okay.
Are you talking about Parler?
Yeah, it was Parler.
Yeah.
I signed up for a Parler account, and you know, I was truthful about who I was and what I stood for. My account got deleted. My account was just because of who I was. Apparently, I didn't fit in. Apparently, they can do that. That's not a problem. And you know what? I said, fine, go ahead. You know, that it just basically proves what I thought about you. Because I didn't get to say anything. I just had a profile, and that was enough to get deleted just because it didn't match. Well, you know, they're going to have a problem with this, too. It's, you know, it goes both ways. If we're forced to have every conspiracy nut and right-winger and white nationalist given a free speech platform on some outlets like Facebook and like Twitter, then I guess the left wing has to have outlets on everything that they hold near and dear. And I want to know how that's going to work out. But I also want to know
I was just going to point out we're available for syndication on all the AM stations.
Yeah, imagine if we, you know, well, radio is different because there's a finite amount of bandwidth and frequencies and things like that. So, but you could draw some parallels. But I wonder, you know, we still, as far as I know, we run an IRC network and we have IRC channels. Are we not allowed to kick people out of the channels when we feel like it? You know, because that's a big part of IRC is getting kicked out of channels. But maybe now that's illegal. Maybe now that's something that would violate their free speech rights.
It's immoral.
Well, I always felt that. But, you know, Alex, what's your legal opinion on that? I mean, IRC could be in danger here.
I think I need to do some research and get back to you after thoroughly writing and vetting a memorandum. I think that's such an interesting question. I don't think that anybody has ever thought of the application of these crazy laws to a service like IRC because of – and I think because of the amount of users that would be on IRC, it could come under the purview of these laws. But unlike something like Twitter or Facebook, there doesn't seem to be any kind of helm of IRC, right? In the sense of nobody individually controls it. There's no entity that can.
Channels have operators, so you know whoever the operator is, they control that. And there's a system operator, too, that controls the entire network.
Possibly. So maybe the system operator. So, you know, maybe like back in the day, you know, like UIUC, right? University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana, right? That was one of the big IRC.
How about IRC.2600.net, our own IRC server, currently up right now? You know, we control the domain, and we have people who control the network, and then we have people who control the channels. So there are people with control there.
Well, absolutely. Look, I think if you control the IRC server and you meet the threshold requirement for the minimum amount of users for the law to take effect, then there may be an argument that the law could apply.
Why is this based on number of users?
Well, that's what the law says. This is to exclude services that are smaller or up and coming. I feel like Gila has the statistics more at her fingertips than I do, but I think it's something like 50 million or 5 million. I remember,
50 million.
What was it, Gila?
It's 50 million.
Right. So IRC, I think it would be tough. I think I don't know if there are.
I don't know if we have 50 million users, but yeah, okay. So maybe that's how Trump gets away with it too, with Truth Social, because they don't have 50 million people.
Right. Yeah. I mean, look, that's a good point, too, that they've chosen a number that's high enough that it would apply to Twitter and Facebook, but low enough that it wouldn't necessarily implicate Truth Social and Trump's.
Hang on a second. If they go and they kick off even more people, then they go below 50 million, problem solved, right? And they don't have to do it anymore.
True. Yeah. That's true. But, you know, the whole point of all this nonsense, right, and the removal of any kind of barrier or community standards with respect to free speech or dialogue isn't necessarily to make this more of an egalitarian public sphere or public square or place for debate. The whole idea behind it is what we've known for really quite a long time now, I would say at least over a decade, which is that contention and pugilism attract people. You know, you think about, you know, going back to elementary school or junior high when there was a fight in the hallway. Everybody gathered around and watched it, right? Nobody just kept walking. This is the same reason why we rubberneck when there's a car accident on the side. Like, you know, we like to see this type of tragedy and conflict, and we observe it and we watch it. And that observation and this conflict generates more and more users, more and more eyeballs on the platform, and they stay on the platform longer or the greater the conflict is. And the more time you spend on that platform, the more data and analytics are being collected about you, the more data and analytics that the platform has, the more likely they are to be able to monetize that data, to sell it to advertisers, and put some kind of bizarre promoted ad in front of you. I mean, it all seems to be very basely and simply designed to attract people to this type of fight.
But, Alex, to carry on that analogy just a little bit, if you're, you know, in an elementary school and you're walking down the hallway and you see, you know, two kids having a fight, yeah, you're tempted to watch for a little bit. What happens when you walk down that same hallway and it's two teachers having a fight? It's a little bit different, isn't it? It's, it carries a different amount of weight. So what I'm saying is that when you have a huge following, I think what you say should be under a bit more scrutiny, just like, you know, elected officials are held to a higher standard based on what they say and what they do. I think the same thing should hold true if you have all of these people hanging on your every word, or even maybe the blue check mark is how we do it. Maybe, you know, if you have one of those, then you have a higher standard you must live up to, whereas anybody else can basically just speak out of their ass, to coin a phrase. But again, when you have a huge number of people, I do think that is something that changes the whole dynamic. Kyle, did you have something? And then Gila.
Gila, go ahead.
All right, Gila first.
I'm thinking about this. I was looking at some stuff about HB 20. This is the law in question is HB 20 in Texas. And I'm thinking about the intersection of HB 20 and Elon Musk buying Twitter. Because remember when this passed. Remember when this happened. This law was passed in September. This bill, this law, I suppose, came up as a knee-jerk reaction to Twitter banning Donald Trump. That's the whole point here. Was they're saying, well, you hurt our hero's feelings, so we're going to pass a law against you. That's where it came from. And there's a reason that these exist in Texas and in Florida. They're still enjoined by the circuit in Florida. But I wonder what's going to happen with this if Elon Musk is like, oh, well, Donald Trump can have his Twitter account back. And they're also, you know, they're required to be really transparent about policies. Like this, it's bills and ownership of large social media companies should not be knee-jerk reactions to anything. The immediacy that people are trying to act with now in so many ways is disrupting the norms of so many things. And I don't mean disrupting in a good way. I don't mean disrupting in the way that it's become used in business. This is bad. People need to think a little bit.
Well, that's the hard part.
I think in this conversation is the possibility of those numbers being boosted, and I'm hearing this number. I'm getting the feeling that it's arbitrary, like that it could change this threshold number, and these things, as you said, it was sort of a made up law. This number, the threshold itself, could be changed, and I'm curious also what might play out as far as users and what the kind of error rate of cushion, shall we say, of fake users there would be in various instances if a company could boost their user to get above a threshold, or perhaps remove users, labeling them as a sort of synthetic user, or so as to fit a threshold that suits whatever that entity wants to do.
Oh my God! I just thought of it. So somebody, if they want to hack us on our IRC network, they just have to create 50 million bots, which they could do, and then all of a sudden we have to follow that rule now and let them say whatever they want to say.
That's exactly the scenario that I was kind of thinking.
We have to stop this.
As we were discussing it, I became really cognizant. I was seeing that vividly. The other small thing I wanted to point out was from what Alex had been talking about is this life cycle sort of information and ads and targeting. And I just want to add, I want to complete the circle of that ad and user information lifecycle, and that is the age-old, the one we know most about, and that is the ad itself. Once it's targeted, it makes you feel inadequate or as though, you know, you're missing something. It's selling you a lifestyle or something about yourself that you don't know you need. And, of course, that enrages you and makes you want to go and lash out at others or prove some asinine point just to score one because of how manipulated you've been in that circle of this sinister data brokering.
Rob, then Alex.
The salient point here, and a really interesting point now that I think about it, is that HB 20 specifies that the site must have 50 million active monthly users. I'm wondering, like, does this include the bots that are all over social media? There are lots of spam bots, there are lots of fake accounts, but there are also some good bots. You know, will this put the onus on sites like Twitter to verify their users' real identities, so to speak? And how would they do that in countries where they're not connected to, like, national ID systems or things like that? There are so many cans of worms here now that this is going to open. I would love to hear what our listeners think about this.
Yeah, I think bots would be counted, Rob. Just because they would count as a user. I guess it would depend on how the Act had defined what a user is, but there certainly would be an argument to discounting bots. But my main point was that, speaking of arbitrary numbers, ours is 802-321-4225. If you want to call, because I thought this was about taking phone calls, Emmanuel. Don't we want to
yes,
take some phone?
Yes, but you said you wanted to say more things at before, so that's why. But Gila, I think you had something too.
Yeah, I was looking at an older article from when the law was passed, and just the specificity of the way it works, and they the bill also required law. It's a law. I apologize, but the way it was written was that you have to, or the social media companies are required to investigate any reported illegal activity within 48 hours. And I cannot, even for a moment, understand how that particular proviso might be adopted by malicious actors. I cannot imagine that people would not just be operating on good faith in that particular piece of this law. They're, just the way it's targeted, it's very much like, we're going to get you, Twitter, and we're going to get you, Facebook. It's like, hey, Zuckerberg, we're coming for you. Now, do I have issues with Mark Zuckerberg and the way he runs his company? 100%. Do I think this law is terrible? Also true. Can two things be true at the same time? Yes.
802-321-4225 is our phone number, 802-321-HACK. What if Twitter started charging people a monthly fee?
Weren't they talking about that?
That would weed out a lot of people, including me. Well, that's a thought.
That was one of the suggested changes that Elon Musk was floating, is to do that, but specifically for corporations and government entities. I think that some of these apps really should have admitted that from the beginning. I know we've talked about it. We've had speakers at Hope talk about it. Jaron Lanier, his talk was about how we started out offering everything for free and then tried to figure out ways to pay for it, and that way ended up being ads. So, I mean, this has been discussed, and certain platforms have changed and evolved over time. You know, Netflix used to send you discs. They don't anymore. There's good reason to maybe reassess this stuff. I think apps like Instagram should admit that it's really, like, mostly social commerce.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the tagging and the photography, that may have been where it started. We love the idea, but that is not how we are using Instagram. It is totally a, like, social marketplace, like, social commerce site. People create personas, they're talking about what they do, then they do brand endorsements, and immediately it's like, okay, this is an ad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it starts one way, and it is not how it is, and ends up once that profile's built. And so, like, I think they need to really admit, like, what are we for?
Go ahead, Gila, and then we're going to take this phone call.
And I think the question is also how things could be tiered in the same way. And, you know, is looking at social media, and when people and brands are trying to have the same conversation at the same time, and sometimes it's fun. Like, when there were a bunch of snack food brands sort of tweeting at each other like they were people, and that was very funny. But I was looking today, I was on Cameo today, I was looking at something, and there are a bunch of people on Cameo now who have two different tiers for their videos. You can pay one fee if it's for a regular video and another fee if it's, like, for a business shout-out. So what those two places come together, I think. Yes, Kyle.
Exactly. And I think you maybe, like, take a look at how it is being used and maybe add a level to that. And if that moves in a better direction, because I think in many ways, yeah, the promoted stuff and the sponsored stuff, that is – was ads, but there are other tiers of I guess usership and ways people take advantage of that. I mean, think of the rules around tagging your thing as this is an ad, or like this is for you know, an endorsement. I'm being paid to say this, basically. And then how often that is enforced. It's not really enforced. Like, if you don't say that you're paid for something, what's going to happen? Who honestly gets some kind of discipline after that. They don't. It's maybe like enforced by peers. If you're caught in some,
in broadcasting,
drama.
It's enforced. The FCC enforces that in broadcasting, but not online.
Not online, right. Not on like a social marketing platform as I described it. Go ahead, Gil.
But do they enforce that? I mean, like when you're talking about sponsored content in TV, specifically like...
I'm not. I'm talking about the apps. I'm saying that it is
a guideline. No, I understand.
I mentioned it, and yet they're supposed to. They don't always, obviously.
They're supposed to. But like if you are in the middle of a Saturday Night Live sketch and you realize that this is actually sponsored content for Taco Bell,
yeah.
I don't know. But they didn't say it was SponCon for Taco Bell.
Like, I see.
SponCon is absolutely insidious.
Well, and it is incredibly hard to discern. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, that was...
Yeah.
I was just pointing to make
you
a point.
Can't really tell. I mean, there's, like, so many... The type of advertising now, there's a lot of, like, breaking the fourth wall and, like, the consumer being in on things, knowing what's going on. Anyway, we can talk about advertising another time. But, anyway, that is a factor to it. I think we have a call.
Yes, we have a patient caller who's been waiting.
That.
Good God. Okay, and that's what happens when we turn a new button up on the board.
So maybe turn the Skype channel down just a little bit.
Okay, Skype goes down. Let's see, this is where everything gets screwed up when we introduce a new...
Your headphones.
We're going to try this again.
Try that once more.
Okay, I think we have a caller. Is there a caller there?
Hello, yes.
How you doing? Hello?
Yes.
Caller, go ahead.
Yes, this is Eleanor. You are correct. I had two different things I wanted to ask you about, or maybe three.
Okay.
But I got back from a trip to find out that my long distance had been cut off. I got WorldCom through MCI, and MCI won't talk to me because I don't know my account number.
Wait, MCI still exists?
Yes.
I thought they're part of Verizon now. What year is this?
Is this basically amounted to a line on your phone company bill, and you pursued why it was cut off, and then they told you that they cut themselves off by going bankrupt or something, or getting bought?
No, they won't talk to me because I don't have the account number handy. Somebody else pays my bills, and they haven't been able to find it.
But
and
the account
deal with me.
The service would have been on your traditional phone bill, the previous one before you upgraded.
Before you were upgraded.
Before you were forced to upgrade.
I was forced to upgrade. Yeah.
My question is, there's not a separate account or
yeah,
something.
was it billed through your regular phone bill before?
I don't know, because as I said, somebody else does the phone bill paying, and they haven't been able to find it.
Well, you know what? You can always change your long distance company. That'll teach them.
I wanted to keep the deal that I got at least many years ago. That gives me a flat fee for each phone call instead of paying by the minute.
You don't think there's another deal like that out there in all the long-distance companies that exist?
I don't know. I haven't searched through it. I just want to keep what I had.
Uh-huh.
Very simple.
Well, you know, it seems like if you call this company and say, look, call me back on my phone number, and, you know, obviously I'm who I say I am, we need to reset certain things. Just basically, say there was a fire and you lost all your paperwork. He can lie. He can come up with all kinds of different stories. And, you know...
They won't do it.
I can't believe that. I really can't.
Mm.
I mean, you know, if it's physically impossible...
So you can't help me.
I'm just saying it doesn't seem to track. Because what if the person that pays your bills is no longer on this earth, okay? What if that happens? Well, what are you supposed to do then? Are they saying that there's nothing we can do and you're basically tied
to
us forever?
That's what they're saying.
Well, then you're talking to the wrong person. Ask to speak to a supervisor. That does not make any sense.
I've tried. It hasn't worked out for me yet.
Uh-huh. All right. Any listeners out there have advice?
Related to the forcible upgrade,
mm-hmm.
This box that they gave me for if there's a if the electricity goes out. It only works if you have a corded phone. And what I have is two handsets. Is there such a thing, do you know, as being able to have one handset and one corded phone for the same phone number?
Yeah, it sounds like if you have like a wireless base station and a you're talking about an indoor wireless handset, right? You have two of those?
Yeah.
So wherever there might be another jack for your telephone in the wall, I would imagine you could hook up a like a slim line or just a small telephone that is wired versus that handset. There's all kinds of little accessories and stuff. You might need to make multiple plugs out of one, like get splitters and things like that. But it's certainly possible.
Okay. Now my separate question has nothing to do with me personally.
Mm-hmm.
Is about the wretched Pacifica safety net people that have asked the FCC not to renew WBAI's license, and complaining about Gary Null and Christine Blasdale.
Mm-hmm.
And you, Emmanuel.
Yeah, that was funny, wasn't it? it's not something we really know a whole lot about, but yeah, it's some wacky people are going around trying to get WBAI taken off the air. Unfortunately, as is so typical with the left, they're affiliated with Pacifica already, and they want to take down another part of Pacifica because it's not part of their faction or something like that. I don't know why we're included in this. I really don't.
Well, they're accusing you of hawking the Hope Conference, which is for profit, which you own.
Yeah, well, all we do is talk, like we do with 2600 meetings, like we do with every activity that we're involved in, we let people know about it. And most of the time, we're trying to get people to participate, to speak, to, engage in some way. It's not about selling tickets. We tell people, go to the website for more information, including tickets. Yeah, it's there, but we never, ever give prices out over the air. We're very aware of the rules. We've been doing it this way for decades. It just seems whoever is filing this is grasping at straws. I can't speak to, the other parts of the complaint. I don't know enough about it. But I do know our operation. I do know what we do. And I do know that we're above board and we know the rules. We've been at this for a very long time. And like I said, it's kind of funny. I don't know, what they're trying to accomplish. But we're quite confident, as you can hear, we're saying the exact same things on the air now that we said before, because we're on level ground here. We're doing everything by the book.
And there's so many things
Do you make a profit from selling tickets to the Hope Conference?
I personally don't make a penny, and anything that comes in that's above our expenses goes right back into the conference. And that's, that's just how we've always operated. So the only people who make money off of this are the people who run the venues, people who sell food or other things to our attendees. But we're just trying to break even, make sure that we don't lose our shirts, and make sure we're able to do it again.
And so many of the things that we're doing on air are for fundraising efforts at the station. A lot of the things that we come up with for the premium gifts, our donations themselves. We're constantly interviewing people outside the New York area, people from around the world, people in the local community, trying to get their voices out there, promote the things that they're doing, the mm-hmm. events that they're hosting. So it's kind of more of exactly what we've stayed committed to for so long about sharing and presenting what the hacker community is up to the wider listening area.
And here's something else, too. We try to include as many people as possible. We try to give back as much as possible. When it comes to fundraising at the radio station, what we do is we donate our premiums, meaning whether it's tickets, whether it's DVDs, whether it's flash drives, whether it's shirts, Many producers at many radio stations do is give premiums to the station, but then they bill the station a discounted rate for those premiums. So it's not really a donation. It's more like a at-cost sale. In our case, it's always 100% donation, and that is our way of supporting the radio station, and it works. You know, if you really want to support the place that you're broadcasting, then you have to actually make a donation, not just sell something to them for a lesser cost. That's always been my impression of what non-commercial radio should be all about.
Has anybody come, you know, any of the people on our side come around to talk with you about defending this petition to deny?
I'm not going to go into details as to who I've talked to and who I haven't talked to, or what they said, but basically everyone has been very supportive. I think we all share a bit of disbelief at how ridiculous this is. The thing that's annoying is that, and maybe Alex can speak to this, when these kinds of frivolous complaints are filed, it gets expensive because you have to defend yourself, even if it's complete nonsense. And, you know, there should be some kind of insurance that protects you against that sort of thing. But there's absolutely nothing that you can do to prevent it, because there are these crackpots out there that will simply come up with all kinds of craziness. And, you know, you can't just not show up. You have to say something. You have to, you know, pay somebody to do, you know, the defense to prove that you're in the right. And then when you're exonerated, you're still out that money. It's not like you have to, the people make the accusations are responsible. So it's really...
Yeah, they're trying to bleed us.
Yeah, I think that is what we're really looking at here. And when you look at the people that supposedly are behind this, they've been trying to do this for years. I don't know why. I don't know what gets into someone's head that would make them want to destroy a part of a network that they belong or they did belong to. Maybe it's some kind of disgruntled people that no longer have the positions they had in the past. I don't know. I don't care. This, you know, we just want to do what we do and be left alone by people who have all these ridiculous fights going on. Alex, do you have anything to add to this?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think with respect to your point about this being having to defend yourself from nuisance suits, and there should be some kind of rule against this. I mean, it's a very interesting policy choice that we've made in the United States, you know, about litigation and who funds it and who has to bear their costs. So this is a very rare instance in a lawsuit that a party is granted attorney's fees. Everybody asks for attorney's fees at the end of once a case has gone to some kind of disposition, the winner is going to ask for their attorney's fees. They're never granted. They're very, very rarely granted as a matter of course, because we have made this policy choice a very long time ago in the United States that parties have to fund their own litigation. In the UK, it's exactly the opposite, and it acts as a disincentive to filing a frivolous lawsuit, because they have something known as a loser pays model. So that, let's say, you know, I'm in litigation with, Alex Jones, right? And, you know, we're fighting each other, long, hard-fought battle, and I win. And we've been fighting for 2 years. Well, Alex Jones, then, is on the hook for all of my legal fees.
He deserves to be.
Well, he should be, yeah.
Rot in jail, I say, for not paying.
Yeah. You know, the downside of this, too, though, is in the loser pays model, as opposed to the funding your own litigation side, once you get so far into the litigation, once you've sunk a certain amount of costs, it then becomes difficult to walk away. It's like, you know, being at the casino, in a sense. You have to keep going. You got to keep chasing those losses. You can't afford to walk away and then cover the other side's costs because you already sunk so much into it. So it's a very hard balancing act, I think, to figure out, you know, what the right policy is. But, you know, going back to the merits of this particular accusation with regard to Pacifica, I think we should just let it run its course. I don't want to speak to the facts or to the merits at all on this. I think we should move on. No disrespect to the caller. But,
I don't mind talking about it. I mean, you know, let's if someone accuses us of something, I'm an open book as far as this kind of thing goes. I think we all are. It's nonsense. But caller, you seem to know more about who's behind it than we do. We just, you know, saw some ridiculous.
Sherry Gelton.
I don't mean the specific names of people. I mean, what do they represent?
Quote, Pacifica Safety Net.
And what is that?
The people who tried to put Pacifica in, I think it's receivership.
Are these the same people who took the station off the air in 2019?
You got it.
Okay, so that's significant.
Donald
right there.
Goldmacher.
Okay, that's significant that it's the people that actually came in and took the station off the air in 2019 and lost in court. When it was challenged and the AI went back on the air, you know, a few weeks later. But boy, those were some dark days. And okay, you know, it kind of makes sense now. We sort of embarrassed them quite a bit, actually, on our airwaves online. We did a show from downstairs in the Commons at Atlantic Avenue, where WBAI is, and we broadcast that online and we challenged these people. And you know, we basically said we're not going to play ball with people like this. I believe we were offered to go back on the air if we didn't criticize them. I remember that kind of a statement being made, and of course we refused to do that. So I think there's a lot of animosity towards us because we didn't back down, because we expressed us, you know, the same reasons as always for speaking out on what you believe in. That's when the people who want to shut you down always strike for that.
Does anyone know who Paul Landsbergis or Nancy Cohen or Michael Herko are?
No, I have no idea who those people are. Why? Are you looking for them?
They're the three people in the WBAI listening area who are supporters of the petition.
What do you mean three? There's only three people who support the petition?
You heard correctly. There are exactly three people in this Pacifica safety net.
Is this to fulfill some sort of legal obligation that you have to have a supporter in the local area?
Right.
Okay, so who knows? Maybe they don't exist. Maybe they do. It's not hard to find three people to sign on to anything. So who they are, I don't think really is that relevant.
Well, if they could, if those three people could be persuaded to leave the suit,
they'd just find three more. They would just find, you know, they'd pay off people. Who knows? It's I don't think that's the way you fight this.
No.
Gila, did you have something? Looked like you had something to say. No. Okay. Sorry.
Does Alex agree with you?
I don't know. Alex is in lawyer mode now, I think.
you know, possibly. I don't know if to pay people off or do any. I wouldn't suggest anything like that. But I think the.
I think they might threaten people. I think they might threaten to kill their parents, you know, if they don't sign on. Am I going too far? Am I saying things I shouldn't say? You know, I don't have an off switch. I'm sorry.
As long as you preface it with, you know, I believe, or it's my opinion, right? I mean, I'm sure you meant to do.
Yeah, okay. I could say that too.
Then look, then you're entitled to your opinion there. Mm-hmm. But I think to get at the point at which you're driving at, I think, which is that it's easy to find people to sign on to these things. I think you're right. I think if these individuals drop the suit, they will probably find others to pick it up. You know, especially if the threshold number is so low. And if that's the case, I mean, I wonder about the wisdom of the procedural choices that we've made to bring these types of challenges over to the FCC. Anyhow, it seems sort of nonsensical. But I think that the more we give this thing oxygen, the more it, you know, it can have legs. And so I think that, you know, we should starve this nonsense of oxygen.
Okay. Well, hopefully the FCC feels the same way, because they're the ones that currently have this complaint, I believe, but I honestly don't see it going anywhere. Certainly not as far as we're concerned. And
I don't think it. I find it hard to understand how they could lump you in with Gary Null and Christine Blasdell.
I think it's probably a personal thing. It's probably because we were outspoken, and you know when the same thing happened in the coup of 2000 and 2001. Basically, we didn't play ball then, and we weren't friends with the people who were occupying the station. Even though we managed to stay on the air, we never signed on to the nonsense that they expected us to.
And mind you, we don't want to be in a position where we're having to take sides. We just want to do the radio show, you know, make some kind of fundraising goal when it's time, you know, to raise money for the station. But beyond that, we don't interface with much else there. It was never the point. So these age-old battles, where it makes no sense to us, because at every moment when it comes to how does the show interact with the station, we approach that moment anew, even if we're behind on the last premiums. We approach that moment anew. We say, collectively, what can we do to contribute to this goal? And we try to get our listeners as invigorated and excited and interested and engaged in that particular need for the station. What this group is doing, these kinds of actions, it's a perennial thing. It's unfortunate we've seen this kind of stuff, and it's people to take a look at that situation, that moment when we're saying, hey, we need to get some new producers, or we need to get some more outside donations, or donations that are continuous billing, you know, that kind of BII buddy program. All those ideas and programs and getting fresh shows on, fresh programs, you know, really even just having a vision for the station collectively, this group is people that take a look at that moment and just say, no, let's start over. We don't want to do this. We don't want to have any kind of altruistic belief in the community that we've created or that is here. And that is dangerous, because that is a fragile thing. That community is, it's ethereal. It's in the vapor. It is not something tangible. It is a collection of people that show up, that do stuff, and that believe, even if they're not like the other programmers at the station, believe in the concept of it. And this grievance, whether it's, you know, personal histories, or people that didn't that feel that maybe the station hasn't provided the right direction, and they aren't touched, moved, and inspired, and willing to be on board for what the station needs, even if it sounds dire or crazy or like it's not enough. This attitude that, oh well, it isn't enough, or it's not my way, or I don't like the people involved, or I think that there are, you know, one or two programs at the station that are dragging the whole place down, or whatever is made up in their head, their response is, let's tear it apart, let's burn it down, and let's guilt and blame every last person that doesn't approve of that. We were one of those groups. We said, you know what, we're going to continue to be here. We're going to continue to contribute in that altruistic way, be a part of WBAI, do our best to continue it in the grandest tradition that anybody else who's been on that radio station has done in the past. We don't want to tear it down. And there are people that they're just uncreative. They don't want to do the work. They don't want to find premiums. They don't want to make new shows that can compete, that can get listeners. They don't want to do that work. Their idea of a better job at this programming and this station is to tear it down, to syndicate other stuff, and or to sell the frequency altogether.
Yeah, I mean, that says a lot right there. And it says that we have pissed off the right people, too, because if this is their modus operandi, then we want nothing to do with that kind of thinking at all. You know, we've always, like I said, we've been an open book. Every single one of our shows online, you know, to show exactly what we say and what we don't say. And we're proud of that. We're quite proud of the things that we've covered in the past, and it's not without controversy. We've been threatened many times by government agencies, by other people that don't like what it is we're talking about. People think that we're too political or that we have the wrong politics. The important thing is to, as we've said in the previous show, hold true to your ideals and be honest with yourself. And I think we can all say that we've done that. I hope that answers your question.
Oh, I hope you'll keep us posted about the case as you are involved in it, since, you know, they've dragged you into it, whether you wanted or not.
Well, you actually seem to know more than we do. How are you getting the information?
When it first came out, I emailed you at 2600. The papers, the Pacifica Foundation.
Right, but you got those papers somehow before we did. How did you manage that?
It was I was part of a group. I get emails from people who support Pacifica without tearing it down.
Oh.
And so I was sent the download thing, which I downloaded and actually read for the actual papers and their actual exhibits, and so I passed them along.
Yeah, I went through some of those exhibits myself, just out of curiosity, and they have entire shows transcripted. It's hilarious.
Yep.
I was reading our show and just basically us fumbling with the phone, trying to get things to work, and just basically berating each other and having all kinds of fun on the air. It's just, I couldn't put it down. It was really funny. But
they got it from the 2600.
Of course, because we had everything available. Yep, that's what we do. Anyway, anything else? We're going to move on. See if there's anybody else out there.
That was it.
Okay, good evening from you.
Good evening.
All right, take care. Our phone number, 802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK. Good fun. It's just, you know, we try to keep these things off the air or off the discussion because, you know, it's I don't want to waste time with our own personal baggage. But this isn't baggage that we asked for. It's baggage that's been thrust upon us, and it's not our baggage. So take it back to the airport.
There's plenty of media and writers out there that had all kinds of time to write about the demise of WBAI. Maybe they could, you know, do some research, write an article, investigate a little bit, and celebrate that WBAI is still here.
Isn't that something?
And it's still sought after, even in these inglorious ways.
Do you remember, I think it was October of 2019, when they came for the station and shut it down, changed the locks and destroyed equipment and basically literally ripped up papers and made it impossible to operate from that building. Even though we could get into the building, we couldn't operate from there anymore because of the vandalism that these people did. And all of the media in New York City, all of the media showed up and reported on the demise of WBAI on the air since 1960 and signing off for the last time in 2019. And, you know, we went to court and we fought a good fight and we won. We came back on the air. I don't think one of those outlets reported that we were back on the air. So in the eyes of a lot of people, WBAI went off the air in 2019 and never came back, even though we were back on the air a month later. That's, you know, par for the course. That's just the madness. And yeah, someone should write a book. Someone should do a movie, or maybe a mini series. Because let's not make it too long. There is so much drama. Let's take a phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Good evening, Emmanuel.
Bobson, you heard it.
The
okay.
Bulgarian entry from the Eurovision Song Contest.
Let me ask you, as a Bulgarian, did you know that song before I played it?
Oh, I heard it on the show on Tuesday.
Well, we didn't play that song on the show. I mean, on Eurovision, on the semifinals.
On the Eurovision semifinals,
but
I
during
heard it, yes.
So that's something you actually watch, is Eurovision semifinals?
Well, yeah.
Okay, that should show you the importance of Eurovision to people in Europe that Bobson will actually pay attention to it.
I got a question.
Go ahead, Kyle.
Hey.
did you hear it during the year at all? Like, you know, in a restaurant or, like, just in the background? Because a lot of times the songs are familiar to people because it's played and then...
No, there's nothing like that.
Yeah, we're kind of unfamiliar with how the whole process works. I think most people here don't even know about Eurovision. But, you know, we saw it for the first time last year, and it's just really intriguing to see how all these countries put forth a song, and then there's, two semifinals and a final, which is taking place on Saturday, and everyone seems to pay attention.
Yeah, I only say that because it seems like some of the songs are really popular going into it.
Yeah.
Well, no, the song is weird and the band is kind of strange. They're doing it.
Oh, it's a rock and roll song. Of course they're strange.
Well, that's not all that's strange about it.
But
one of Rainbow's former singers came over here and started a band or some such.
Rainbow as in the band that came from Deep Purple?
Yeah.
Wow.
One of their former singers came over here and started doing his stuff.
You know, Richie Blackmore lives on Long Island now. So he's fairly local.
Well, he knows the singer I'm speaking of personally.
Yeah. It's a small community, so that's cool. Now, I should point out, just for the benefit of listeners, that while I played the Bulgarian song, and no offense, Bobson, I do not think the Bulgarian song is the best song of the 40. The one that I think is the best song, hands down, well, maybe you want to say what your favorite is first, unless it's Bulgaria?
Well, I've only watched the first semifinal because the second one is going to be shown later today.
Okay. Did you have a favorite?
No, not yet.
Okay, my favorite, Moldova. Wow. It's all about a train ride from Chișinău to Bucharest, which is the opposite of what Kyle and I did a few years ago. But, boy, it captured spirit, and it was probably the most unique song in the whole competition. So Moldova, hands down for me.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. I remember hearing it.
Great video, too.
First. Yep.
And, of course, Ukraine had a good song as well. Although it sounds like the song from last year. Did they repeat part of the song from last year?
I have no idea.
Well, I think there's... I just recognize it, and I shouldn't recognize it if it's a new song.
Well, Bobson, Alex here. Coxie Bobson, by the way.
How dare you? You just declared war on his ancestors and called him a water buffalo on top of that.
You think so? Maybe. I mean, only Bobson will know. Right? Right, Bobson? I mean...
I'll leave you two to settle that score. But
yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I answered your question.
You did. I didn't hear it because somebody was talking over you.
Oh, okay.
Answer his question again, please.
Bivam tikax.
Yeah, okay, very good.
All right, so it's on at dawn, I guess, is when we'll settle this.
Yeah,
all right.
Very, very glad to hear that. I'm wondering, though, you know, with this whole Eurovision thing, I've never seen any of it. So we're in the finals now? Is this like, you know, like a, were the semifinals?
The first semifinal was last night, and the next one, I think, is it today, and then the final is Saturday? Is that how it works?
But I mean, how are they just...
Second semifinal is on Thursday night.
Thursday, okay.
European time, of course.
Uh-huh.
And Saturday.
And Alex, you can see all of the songs on YouTube. Just type in Eurovision 2020, and you'll see something with 40 songs.
2022.
I'm sorry, 2022. You'll see 40 songs, and you can just play them all. It doesn't take much time because they're all 3 minutes long, so you get through the whole thing in about 2 hours.
Oh,
Well, I'm wondering, though, are they judged on the basis of a live version of their song or a recorded version of their song? And I'm imagining this room or a concert hall festooned with the flags of the European Union where everybody goes in and plays on equal footing, but I'm not sure if that's the case.
Well, as far as I know, this every time the location where it's performed is based on last year's winner.
Yeah, last year Italy won.
So last year Italy won, so this time it's a whole, it's a concert hall in Italy somewhere.
Mm-hmm. And I might add that last year Italy's song that won was a rock and roll song, which doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, it was. Oh, well.
So, yeah, as far as how it all works, I got very confused by the rules. I know you can't, you know, people vote, people call in, but you can't vote for your own country. You can only vote for other songs from other countries. But then there are other ways of voting, too, from, I think, expert voters or something. I'm not really sure I understand how it works. I do know that last year, somehow, the United Kingdom got zero votes. So I don't know how that exactly happened, but it's a weird system, just like most European soccer systems are weird in our eyes.
Well, it's good fun, I think.
Yeah, it's great fun. What I don't understand, though, Israel, not in Europe, but they're part of Eurovision. Australia, really not in Europe, and they're part of Eurovision. Maybe, you know, we could get into Eurovision somehow. I also noticed in this year's competition, there's a lot of songs in English, and a lot of songs where there aren't even accents. It seems like, you know, like Belgium and Germany, it seems like Americans.
And a lot of songs where the actor or the singer has a copy of themselves, and
yes,
they're like clones of themselves. There's a lot of copies of people.
There's videos, because every song has a video. Sometimes it's a live performance, but it's still a video. But yeah, as Kyle said, a lot of the protagonist of these videos, in the end, you find out, oh, that person is him. It's all circular.
It's duplicitousness.
Uh-huh.
Maybe
it's been done before.
It's just,
yeah, some of it's really cheesy, but it's all good fun, and it's all, you know, I was just listening before to BBC Radio 5, which I just found out exists, and it's a sports channel, and they were having a rousing debate about whether Eurovision was better than Euro. Euro being the soccer competition that takes place every 4 years. But they were having a good conversation about who has, you know, more affinity to their country and how it brings out the best in people. Not the kind of sports conversation you hear in America, but it was really kind of interesting to listen to.
Well, sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I had heard that stuff.
Well, you can probably find it online. I'm sure it's easy to play these back. That's how I did it.
Oh, well, maybe.
All right. Well, I think we've covered just about everything. Any other questions or comments before we move on to, I think, our final call?
Well, nothing I can think of.
Okay.
Thanks for the show, and have a good night, everybody.
All right. Good hearing from you, Boston. Oh, and Alex is holding up some kind of Bulgarian dessert. Do you want to tell us what that was, cause, since he can't see you?
Yes, Bob. So I have I haven't tried these yet, so I think you need to call back next week. But I did stop by the Bulgarian grocery earlier this morning on my way to Pennsylvania, and I had picked up some Vadove. I think it's called Vadove. Is that right?
It doesn't sound like anything that's...
They're basically like these milk chocolate kind of wafers with, it's a cacao creme. Cacao? Cacao, I guess, is
cocoa-based, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and creme would be cream, right? What we would see as K-P-E-M would be creme, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, I'm looking forward to these. They seem to have quite a selection of different flavors of these cookies. So, we will be sure to try every single one of them in the weeks ahead.
It seems all you ever get is dessert. Well, when are you going to get meat or something?
Yeah, you know, in fact, I did pick up some meat today, but it turned out to be, I thought it was Polish kielbasa. It actually wound up being a Russian kielbasa. So I hope I didn't violate some kind of sanction.
I think you might have to report that to somebody, because that certainly is not in keeping with the values that we want to pass on to our kids.
That is true, yeah. I will say, though, I guess a lot of Bulgarians still speak Russian in a sense, right? Do you speak Russian at all, Bobson?
Well, yes, I studied it in grade school.
All right. So, я говорю по-русски чуть-чуть.
What a wise ass. You know, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong about Bobson, but a lot of people in Bulgaria don't want to speak Russian. They just were forced to learn Russian when they were growing up because of the influence, right?
Well, there's that, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, prestidiet, Bobson, мой друг. Emmanuel, очень странный мальчик.
Yes, same to you, doubled. I'll look it up later. Bobson, great to hear from you. Take care.
Have a good evening. Thank you for the show.
I think the sun is coming up where Bobson is right now, so that's always good to hear from him. Okay, so we're going to open the phone lines for one more call. That's 802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK, and then we'll be signing off for this week. Just assume somebody would say something if I just relaxed for a second. But no, apparently not. No one has anything to say. Okay, great.
I do, actually.
Go ahead, please.
And I'm sorry I wasn't able to share this earlier, but my favorite Eurovision moment is first of all, the movie, the Netflix movie from a couple years ago that functionally was Eurovision 2020, Fire Saga. that's sort of fantastic. But the other thing is, speaking of Israel, there was a CD that was put out by some studio musicians, and it was like the best of Eurovision, and they sang everything phonetically. So if you listen to the Israeli songs that won, they're total gibberish, and it is the funniest thing ever. I love everything about it.
But by the way, this year's Israeli entry is great. Mm-hmm. It really is one of my favorites. That, Ukraine, but Moldova takes it all. Moldova was the best. Yeah. I think Serbia did a good one, too. Serbia had a pretty good entry this time.
Did you see the U.S. equivalent?
What is the U.S. equivalent?
It was called the American Song Contest, and it just ended this week. And they had people from representing every state and every territory, and it was fascinating because some people were complete unknowns, and like Michael Bolton was representing Connecticut.
Well, wait a minute.
He made it to the final.
Michael Bolton. Hold on a second. He's not an unknown.
No, some people were complete unknowns, but people were not.
Yeah, but why? Okay. Well, first of all, how come we don't know about this? Second of all, shouldn't it be for people pretty much on an even level? Like, you know, to have Paul McCartney competing, you know, with the kid next door just learn how to play guitar, kind of unfair. You know, it should be something.
I don't know how they found the initial representatives, but, like, you know, if you're thinking of a singer from Alaska, so Jewel represented Alaska but got eliminated in the early rounds. I will admit I wasn't watching it.
It sounds like mostly superstars then, but I think it would be more interesting. Really? Okay.
Really?
All right. I think it'd be more interesting though if there are, you know, new people that are new on the scene. It should be new music. And
do not disagree with you, yeah. But I would also say that the Netflix movie Eurovision: The Story of Fire Saga, which came out a couple years ago, was really quite good. The music was good. They got actual Eurovision performers from previous years to make cameos in it. I enjoyed it very much.
Do they explain the voting, how it works?
A little bit.
All right.
Sort of.
I'll try.
They cut part of that because there's like Will Ferrell running.
Yeah, but I gotta learn these things. Just like I have to learn how to play cricket. You know, people explain it to me and then I forget it, and I would like for it to stick.
Best of luck.
All right, let's take this last phone call. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Greetings. It's Kirby S. from Etobicoke.
Hey, how you doing?
Not too bad. the reason I called today was I wanted to ask you guys, planning to come to the conference, and there's several options for the accommodations, and I was wondering if anybody could shed any light on the hotel options or the on-campus options or...
Well, do you have specific questions about
anything at all?
Yeah, specific questions about any of those options, and we can certainly answer them. We'll try to.
Well, just, you know, has anybody stayed at the facilities? Is on-campus a good idea? Is it an interesting experience? You know, just...
Obviously,
this is a first time for everything, right, kind of thing.
I'll do my best, and I'll hand it over to Gila, who's been managing most of this. We're all new to this. It's a new location for us. We do know of a double hotel that's down the road a ways, about a mile or maybe 2 miles from the site, which is offering a discounted price, and it's near a lot of restaurants, and there's a dive bar downstairs, so it's kind of a cool place to be. In fact, it's right on the Long Island Expressway. You can look out your window and see the expressway going by. So if you want an interesting Queens experience, that is one way to do that. It's basically a place where you can get away from the site for a while if you want to do that. Now, if you want to be on site, then there's the on-campus housing situation, and that is obviously very, very convenient because you're right there. You'll wake up on campus. But the other part of that is that you're part of St. John's community at that point. You have to follow the St. John's rules. They have what we would consider kind of strange rules. For instance, no alcohol allowed on campus or in the dormitories. And the dormitories are same-sex, so, you know, you can't have, say, a husband and wife or a family or girlfriend and boyfriend. You can't have that in the dormitory. So if that's something that is a deal-breaker, that's what the hotel is for. But if you want something that is really convenient and right on campus, and I think that's a good option. I'll give it. Go ahead.
Yes, so I absolutely agree with everything Emmanuel is saying. Let me throw in a couple more points for you. One thing we really want to make sure that people understand, it's not just that you're going to be subject to St. John's policies, but that is very true. Don't forget, this is a college dorm. You are going to be sleeping in a single bed. If you're okay with sleeping in a twin bed, on campus may be a good option for you. There's also a possibility that if you sign up for a room, let me try this again. You're going to sign up for a room. Rooms are part of suites. There is a very distinct possibility you'll be sharing a bathroom with a stranger if you stay on campus. You just need to be prepared for that. Now, if you stay on campus or you stay in a hotel, breakfast is included no matter where you stay. And no matter where you stay, you don't need to pack sheets and towels. Those things are included as well. So if that's a factor in your considerations, don't worry about that. Free parking on campus, parking costs at the hotel. But also, please don't forget, St. John's is pretty easy to get to no matter where you are in four of the five boroughs. I can't vouch if you want to stay on Staten Island. That's a little more complicated.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to stay in Midtown Manhattan, you can do that. The hotels we have, the hotels that St. John's has connections with that we're using are... there are two chain hotels. It's a Garden Inn and a Courtyard. They're both Marriott properties. They're very nice. If you've stayed in one somewhere, you have an idea of what to expect.
And they're right next door to each other.
They're right next door to each other. Here's the thing to remember. They're not enormous hotels. We are not going into a space the size of the Hotel Pennsylvania. If you want to stay in one of the hotels, please get on that sooner rather than later. They're not huge.
Yeah.
They may sell out.
Yeah, they will. They will sell out at some point.
Our block closes July 1.
Yes. Good to know. And, you know, there's no need for a bigger hotel because we're not having the conference in the hotel.
Exactly.
The hotel is simply for people to sleep in. But, again, it's convenient. There's a bus that goes right to campus, or it's a very quick Uber ride, or many other ways to get there.
Lots of places to stay. One very important thing we want to remind you about in terms of staying on campus, and if there are questions that you have that we have not answered, please give us a holler. Please don't forget that if you are a person who does not, if you identify as non-binary, you should not stay on campus. This is a policy thing. It's not our policy. You need to identify as male or female, and if you don't, staying on campus is not a good choice for you. We don't love it at all, but this is a policy of our host institution.
But we're talking about this filling out the form, right? It's not like someone's going to come to your room and check and say, what are you, right?
But correct.
You have to choose one or the other. That's how they work.
You have to choose one or the other, and you have to provide a photo and photo ID.
Right.
And that's how they assign your housing. The other thing we need to remember is that if you don't stay in the dorms, you can't go to the dorms. St. John's is issuing ID to our attendees who are staying in the dorms. And we are not in charge of that. St. John's is going to have personnel who are checking IDs on the way to the dorms. If you don't have a dorm reservation, you can't go to the dorms. We cannot stress this hard enough.
Right.
So if you're staying in the dorms and planning on having a party, please don't.
Yeah, and they're asking for your ID. We are not asking for your ID. We do not get
correct.
Your ID. The dormitory, St. John's, that's their policy.
This is an on-campus ID.
Right.
And this is not a Hope staff thing. Hope staff is not, we're not doing housing assignments. We can't change your rooming if you don't like it. We have nothing to do with this.
But you can request that you'll...
You can request a roommate.
Yes.
But the makeup of your suite is not... We cannot guarantee the makeup of your suite.
So hold on. As far as roommates, now there's two options, right? There's a single and a double. Now if it's a double, there's two people per room, and if it's somebody you know, then that's the person that you'll be with. Otherwise, it could be a complete random stranger. Or you can choose to have a single, which is not that much more expensive than a double, and then you have the room to yourself. Did I have that right?
That's absolutely correct.
Okay.
Rooms are assigned to suites. Even if you have a single room, you will be sharing a bathroom with another person. Just bear that in mind as well. But, yes, if you and a friend decide you want to share a room and you sign up together, we can make that happen as long as it's a roommate of your same gender. Like, Rob and I cannot share a room at the conference.
It's silly.
It's silly. It's not ours. And also remember that this is a college campus and we're adults and they were not their core constituency.
Yeah, it's just consider it a challenge.
One option. There's other options, so it's not like that's the only thing.
Right.
Exactly.
That's why we have multiple options, so that people can make a choice. But just understand that, you know, their campus, their rules as far as that goes. As far as the conference goes, that's what we run.
Also, if you want to look for an Airbnb somewhere in Queens, you can literally, the entire city is at your feet here. And you can get there easily from anywhere. You know, when I went to college at a tiny university in Los Angeles and they said, the city is your campus. And it's very true. You can, you know, it's a heck of a slogan, but you can come to the conference and then you can stay wherever you like, get back and forth from campus very easily. Were there other questions that you had that we have not addressed?
I mean, no, but that's fabulous in terms of the information you provided. I'm sure lots of people probably were wondering the same thing as I, and I'll tell you, I will be staying at the hotel to your thorough explanation,
mm-hmm.
which is cool, and I'll get on that shortly. For my particular, you know, I may want to commiserate or...
Of course.
...visitors or something without people. But at the same time... I think my big problem is I'm trying to figure out how to get to the conference. And so I was wondering if each of the hosts could speak on what they think is possibly the best or a cool way to get down there from Canada.
Now, you're in Ontario, right?
Yeah.
Okay, as far as I understand...
I could cross the border in an hour from where I am.
Now, is flying your preference or land travel?
I mean, at this point, it does. I'm open to anything. If there's a cool line that runs somewhere,
uh-huh.
if there's a good drive, or you know.
Well, driving is easy, you know, because you simply, you know, come down the interstate and basically, you can get to St. John's very easily that way, just crossing over one of the bridges. And flying is simple because LaGuardia Airport, I believe, has flights from Canada. And certainly JFK does, and they're both very close to campus and very easy to get to. Then, of course, there's Amtrak, but there's only one train a day that comes down through New York State from Toronto. It's called the Maple Leaf. And that takes you to Penn Station. Would have been good when the Hotel Pennsylvania was there, because it was right across the street. But it's also easy to get to. You just get on, you know, get off and get onto. Actually, you know, stay in Penn Station, you get on the LIRR and take that out to I believe Jamaica, which almost every train stops at. And from there, you hop on a bus and you're on campus. I think there's full directions. Am I right, Gila, on our website?
If you go to hope.net/travel.html, you will find all kinds of information on how to get to St. John's from New York. It is up to you how to get to New York, but then we give you information for subway, rail, bus, car. Everything you may need to know about getting to campus, we've got it there for you. I think if you want to drive, that's a great option. I think the train, understanding that there are convenience issues, flying into all of these things are possible. Also, don't forget, if you land, if arrive at Penn Station, you can also take the subway from Penn Station.
Yeah, the subway.
You can take the E train from Penn Station, which will take you straight out to Queens. It is also less expensive than the LIRR.
It's not quick, though. That the subway will take a while.
The subway does take a while. But there are lots of options. If it were my call, I would say when you get to the city, take an express bus out to Queens. I am a huge fan of the express buses, which run directly from Manhattan to Queens. Or really, they run to all the boroughs, but the ones we're talking about here run to Queens. I did get Rob on his first express bus a couple weeks ago. I think it was a life-changing experience for him. It's basically a coach bus that the MTA runs. So there's space, there's USB chargers at your seat, there's a little fan for your face. I would take an express bus. I think they're kind of fantastic. And then you get to see some of the city.
Is that outlined on the website as well, the express buses?
Via MTA express bus. When I wrote up the travel instructions, I kind of went nuts on all the different ways you could get to campus.
That's
everything
what we want.
You could possibly need to know is here.
That's all we ask, is that people go nuts when they are describing the various aspects of Hope. So I hope that answers your question.
Oh, certainly. No, definitely shed some light on stuff. Because, you know, it's especially these days, it's a little daunting planning a trip and figuring out exactly what to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we've heard that from a lot of people. In fact, that's one of the reasons why we introduced the virtual option for people that, you know, it's too daunting and they don't want to take a trip this early on, or they just, you know, they're exhausted from the last few years. We get that. And we just want to make sure everybody is included one way or another. So those of you who decide to get a virtual ticket, you can participate in all the ways that we had in 2020. Those of you who want to give a talk virtually, we're going to have a track for virtual talks as well. So we're going to try and do a lot.
That's great.
If I was Kirby, what I would do, I would go from Toronto to London, Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think you can get into, like, Detroit. I don't know how that works. I'm curious about that area.
Windsor,
Ontario.
Yeah.
That connects to Detroit. I'd still check out London, though, because I'm curious about that city. I haven't been to London in Canada. And then
I have family in London.
Okay. So there you go. You stop in, you have dinner.
Why are you planning out his whole trip?
Well, he asked what every single person on the show would do were they him planning this trip. I'm just answering the question. I'm the innocent one here.
Okay, so now he's got to have dinner with his family, all right? And then, so obviously he can't leave till the next morning.
That may or may not happen.
They're going to want him to stay over.
Then you go to Chicago.
Chicago?
You spend some time in Chicago. Yeah, you backtrack a little bit.
When is he leaving, June?
And then you get on... You get on the Amtrak train, because Amtrak...
The Lakeshore Limited?
Yeah.
Oh, the Lakeshore Limited, that's a good train. But there's still only one of those a day.
Yep.
I said the Maple Leaf, because the Maple Leaf comes from Toronto, although, you know what, it doesn't go to Toronto now because of COVID, but it will start on June 27th, just a little point of information.
The Lakeshore Limited is the Amtrak train that goes to the East Coast. There's also...
it's a sleeper, though.
What's the Southern, the Indiana Rail?
Yeah, that's not going to work for him. That goes to Chicago.
Yeah, that's a dead end.
That goes from Chicago from Indiana. It doesn't go to New York. So.
I would still check it out.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, Lakeshore Limited, that'll get you to one end of the country. Yeah, from the mid of the country, that will send you to the east. And then once you're in the east, you would follow what Gila had suggested for all the myriad ways you can get to Queens.
Have you been to New York before, Kirby?
Yes, I have.
Okay, so you're somewhat familiar.
And also, I could be in Niagara Falls, New York, in like an hour and a half from where I'm sitting.
Okay.
Oh, there you go. That's another way.
Well, the Maple Leaf stops there.
You need a barrel.
Well, some people have told me to go do that because there's all kinds of commotion at our airports right now.
Okay.
The regulations that the government still has in place are taking 2 or 3 minutes extra per customer. And so it's like 3-4 hour waits.
Wow.
To get processed in and out of the Toronto airport.
Interesting. Okay. So, yeah, maybe.
I'm probing around.
Are you thinking of taking a plane from upstate New York or getting on a train in that area?
Mm-hmm. Some people, they go to Buffalo,
mm-hmm.
and they take planes from there.
Okay. Well, that would definitely work.
That's quite easy to access.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, maybe a train, even just cross the border and get it on a train.
Well, only one train a day, but as far as I know. Yes, Gila, go ahead.
Okay, I'm coming up with a new idea.
All right.
Okay. Get yourself across the border. Fly to JFK. I got it. Okay. Get yourself across the border. Fly from,
okay.
I don't know, is it Buffalo? Fly from that area to JFK. Take the air train to the E train to the bus to campus. That's how I would do it.
You don't need the E train. You can get a bus from Jamaica after the air train.
That's also true.
Yeah.
Take the air train to Jamaica. And then get the bus, and then you're there. All possibilities abound. So, yes, hope.netflushtravel.html. This is all there. We can't get you to New York, but once we get you to New York, we tell you what to do.
I feel like there's a competition. I feel like we've just started the hope turn-by-turn competition. How do you get to Hope? You don't tell us exactly where you start. We don't really care that
much. Hope is the only conference where getting to the conference is part of the conference.
Yeah.
Wait, do you guys remember a couple years ago I suggested that as a premium we offer ourselves as like a voice for your ways and no one took us up on it?
Yeah, yeah. There's not that many recordings to record on your ways either.
This is what I'm saying, though. Like, yeah. I think getting directions from the Off the Hook panel. Oh my God, Kirby, you're doing amazing things here. We appreciate it.
Well, I'm gonna have to figure this out, and I'm gonna have to plan soon because I also have the possibility of a plane into the other airport. What's the other airport?
LaGuardia. Right, LaGuardia.
What's the other airport?
Newark.
Newark.
That's not as close.
Yeah, Newark.
It's New Jersey.
Yeah.
But we have a downtown airport. That it's basically like getting on a bus. Like you go down to the basically middle of just downtown, and then there's an airport right there. You take a little tunnel, or there used to be a ferry, like 10 minutes or 5 minutes, and you can fly in the plane. It's like an hour and 20 minutes to that airport.
Okay.
From downtown Toronto.
Interesting. Well, whichever way you go, I'm sure it'll be good. It'll be unique.
We're going to figure it out, and we're going to we'll get there one way or another.
Okay. And keep checking hope.net for updates on the conference. It's going to be amazing.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we'll see you in July.
Okay, you bet.
All right, take care.
Great.
Bye-bye. And I think that's going to do it for us here tonight. Right?
It's so early.
Actually, it's 9:30. We've been at this an hour and a half.
Good 90 minutes.
And we did an hour show before that, so it's not as early as you might think.
Oh, yeah. And, well, I was being sarcastic, but,
it's hard to tell.
Yeah.
Sarcasm. Yeah, that'll work.
But I do enjoy your sarcasm so much.
Yeah.
Sarcasm is the best.
It is.
It seems like the station. It's like everybody's like, hey, we should all be serious, and someone's like, I'm going to do sarcasm.
Let's do that.
That's like the equivalent to the fundraising, or like, let's destroy the station thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. A lot of that going around. Okay, so oth@2600.com, email address, write to us. As far as I know, we'll be back next week, and yes, keep checking hope.net for updates on that, and send us your stories or thoughts or anything like that. We're looking for speakers for the conference and workshop participants and anything you have an idea to do. We can probably help you do it at the conference. So that's pretty awesome. All right. Till next week. Good night.